Imagine your highly secure, company-issued laptop gets swiped right off your table at a coffee shop. Your heart drops for a split second, but then you take a breath.
Right, because you remember it's locked down.
Exactly. You remember the entire hard drive is locked down with enterprise-grade encryption. It's essentially this digital steel vault. But what if the thief doesn't even need to bother cracking that complex lock because they just found a highly documented way to quietly slide the hinges right off the vault door and walk straight in?
Yeah, that foundational trust we place in our daily technology is really built on assumptions. We assume our data at rest is safe. We assume our physical input devices are as, you know, optimized as they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And we assume the corporations building these tools are driven by actual utility rather than just a narrative. But when those assumptions shatter, well, the landscape shifts dramatically.
It really does. So, welcome to the Deep Dive. For you listening today, we have pulled together a massive stack of updates from the May 15th, 2026 edition of the Tech in Night Tech and Gaming Editorial.
It's a heavy one today.
It is. Our mission is to explore this fascinating collision happening right now across the tech world. We are unpacking the friction between human creativity, our expectation of fundamental digital security, and the relentless, often messy push of corporate AI mandates. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the literal physical buttons we press to interact with our machines.
Yeah, the hardware interface. It's where human intent actually translates into digital action. And we just got an unexpected look at how Microsoft intends to overhaul that entire physical layer.
Oh, this leak is wild. So Brazil's Anatel regulator, which functions similarly to the FCC here, accidentally published some certification images that were quickly picked up by Technoblog.
Right, the new controller.
Yeah, the completely unannounced Xbox Elite 3 controller. This is the direct successor to the Elite 2 from way back in 2019. And looking through the source details, it retains the modular features that gamers love, right? Like the interchangeable D-pad and the rear back paddles.
Which people expected.
Sure. But Microsoft added an unannounced pair button, two completely unidentified mystery buttons, and crucially, two new scroll wheels situated right at the bottom of the controller.
Which is huge. Putting scroll wheels on a traditional console gamepad fundamentally alters the whole input paradigm.
Yeah.
Well, console gaming has dealt with this specific mechanical bottleneck for decades. You only have two thumbs and you only have two analog sticks.
To me, adding scroll wheels to a standard controller, it feels like upgrading from a standard car steering wheel to a full airplane cockpit.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Right. Because a traditional steering wheel or a D-pad, it gives you binary directional commands. But a cockpit gives you independent, persistent analog controls.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't just steering. You have granular control over multiple continuous axes of input simultaneously without taking your hands off the primary controls.
Exactly. And if you look at a title like Microsoft Flight Simulator, the mechanics of that analogy become incredibly literal. You are managing complex, continuous systems in that game.
Right. You need that precision.
Yeah, because a standard button press is binary. It's either on or off, 100% or zero. An analog stick works for steering, but, you know, it springs back to the center the second you let go.
Right.
A scroll wheel offers a dedicated, persistent analog state, so you can roll it to 62% throttle, take your finger off, and the throttle just stays at 62%. Tying up one of your primary thumbsticks to manage throttle takes away your ability to look around the cockpit or steer.
Wait, but we already have analog triggers on the back of the controller for things like throttle and racing games.
Yep.
Why wouldn't developers just use those?
So triggers are excellent for acceleration, but they still require continuous physical tension from the user's fingers to maintain a specific state.
Oh, which tires your hands out.
Exactly. It causes physical fatigue over long sessions. Yeah. A scroll wheel holds its position. And beyond flight simulators, think about how this revolutionizes complex strategy games and sprawling RPGs.
Oh, right. Menu navigation.
Yeah. Those genres are natively built for a mouse and keyboard because navigating multi-layered grid-based inventory menus with a directional pad is just notoriously tedious. A physical scroll wheel grants lightning-fast, highly precise menu navigation. It effectively bridges the input fidelity gap between a PC and a living room console.
That makes total sense. And the Tekken editorial also notes that a smaller, dedicated cloud gaming controller leaked simultaneously alongside the Elite 3, which implies Microsoft is prepping a massive Xbox hardware refresh for their summer showcase in June or July. So we are seeing Microsoft give gamers unprecedented physical control over their hardware, which makes it incredibly ironic that on the exact same day we learned Windows users are losing complete digital control over their enterprise devices.
Yeah, that pivot is brutal. An anonymous security researcher known as Chaotic Eclipse, who, by the way, has a verified track record of finding three major Microsoft Defender flaws, they just publicly released two completely unpatched Windows Zero Day vulnerabilities.
And for anyone listening who might not follow cybersecurity daily, Zero Day means the software vendor has had 0 days of notice to fix the flaw before it went public.
Right, meaning these exploits are out in the wild, totally unpatched, and actively being weaponized.
And the first one is just terrifying. It's codenamed Yellow Key, and it completely bypasses BitLocker encryption. Going back to our earlier analogy, BitLocker is that unbreakable digital vault door. The encryption itself is mathematically sound.
Yeah, the math isn't the problem.
Exactly. But Yellow Key allows an attacker to physically read the plaintext data on a stolen, fully encrypted laptop. How does that even work?
Well, to understand why this is possible and, you know, how to stop it, you have to understand the mechanism behind BitLocker. When you encrypt your hard drive, the decryption key is typically stored on a physical chip on your computer's motherboard called the TPM, the Trusted Platform Module.
Okay, the TPM.
Right. When you press the power button, the TPM checks the hardware state. If it believes the system hasn't been tampered with, it automatically hands that decryption key over to the Windows operating system so it can boot up.
Wait, let me stop you there. Why would the system be designed to hand over the key automatically? Doesn't that defeat the purpose of having a lock if the key is just sitting on the motherboard waiting to be handed over?
It's designed for a frictionless user convenience. Enterprises want laptops to be encrypted if they are shut down and stolen, but they really don't want employees to have to type in a massive cryptographic recovery key every single morning.
Oh, sure. The IT help desk would be overwhelmed.
Exactly. So Yellow Key exploits this automated convenience. The vulnerability allows an attacker with physical access to the device to basically eavesdrop on the communication lanes of the motherboard. They intercept the key at the exact microsecond. The TPM hands it over to the CPU during the boot sequence.
So they are literally snatching the key out of the air before Windows even loads. Wow. How do you possibly defend against a flaw in the physical hardware communication?
You break the automated chain. And listeners need to take direct, actionable steps on this today. Do not rely solely on the TPM for your BitLocker configuration.
So what's the fix?
You need to go into your Windows security settings and configure BitLocker to require TPM plus a PIN. By doing this, the TPM chip will physically refuse to release the encryption key to the system until a human being types a numeric PI on the keyboard. And this happens before Windows even attempts to load.
Oh, I see. So the attacker can't intercept the key because the TPM just won't send it.
Exactly.
Okay, that handles Yellow Key. But Chaotic Eclipse also dropped a second zero day called Green Plasma. This is a privilege escalation vulnerability rooted in something called Windows CTFMON, which is the collaborative translation framework used for text input and language bars.
Right, and privilege escalation is functionally like moving from the building's lobby to the executive suite without a security badge.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, if an attacker gains even the lowest level of guest access to a machine, Green Plasma allows them to instantly elevate their permissions to full administrator access. They can install malware, create new user accounts, rewrite system registries, you name it.
And since both Yellow Key and Green Plasma are completely unpatched, IT departments must watch Microsoft's security bulletins aggressively right now.
Very aggressively.
You cannot wait for the standard monthly Patch Tuesday cycle. You need to deploy the emergency out-of-band patch the moment Microsoft compiles it.
Absolutely.
So shifting our focus from the micro level of these individual laptop vulnerabilities, we need to look at the macro level of the technology sector. The sheer financial gravity of the industry is pulling capital away from traditional software and hardware and funneling it entirely into AI infrastructure.
It really is. The scale of capital deployment happening right now is historic. Cerebras Systems, which is an AI hardware company founded in 2016, just executed the first major tech IPO of 2026.
And they raised what, $5.5 billion?
Yeah, $5.5 billion from the public market. And the stock surged 108% on its very first day of trading.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the technology driving that massive valuation, their flagship WSE3 chip, takes a radically different approach to processing than the industry standard.
Yeah, it breaks all the conventional rules.
Right. NVIDIA's approach to AI processing involves taking thousands of smaller, distinct graphical processing units, GPUs, and networking them together. To use an analogy, NVIDIA builds a massive, sprawling city composed of thousands of small, highly specialized factories. But to build a complex product, like training a massive AI model, those independent factories have to constantly package up parts, put them on trucks, and ship them to each other over a network of roads.
And that physical transit of data creates a profound bottleneck known as the memory wall. No matter how fast your processors are, the data physically has to leave one chip, travel across a printed circuit board or a fiber optic network cable, and enter another chip.
Which takes time.
Right. In the realm of artificial intelligence, where you are processing trillions of parameters simultaneously, the nanoseconds it takes data to travel those physical distances, they add up to massive latency delays and massive power consumption.
So Cerebras looked at that city of small factories and essentially said, what if we just build one continuous megafactory?
Yeah, the wafer-scale chip.
Exactly, their WSE3. Instead of slicing a silicon wafer into dozens of smaller chips, they leave the entire pizza-sized wafer intact as one massive processor.
Right, so the components are all housed in the exact same physical silicon geography. The processing cores and the memory are literally millimeters apart.
Wow.
So instead of putting parts on a truck and driving them across town, the person assembling the data just turns around and hands it directly to the person standing next to them. Communication happens almost instantly without ever leaving the silicon block.
I have to challenge the premise here, though. If a single megachip is so vastly superior for eliminating latency, why hasn't NVIDIA or Intel been doing this for the last decade? Why did it take a startup from 2016 to figure this out?
Well, it comes down to the physics of silicon manufacturing yield rates. When you print microscopic transistors onto a silicon wafer, there are always going to be microscopic flaws, a speck of dust, a tiny imperfection.
Right, nothing is perfect.
Exactly. If you slice that wafer into 100 small chips, maybe 5 of them have flaws and you throw them away, but you still have 95 good chips.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. If you try to use the entire wafer as one single chip, a single microscopic flaw ruins the entire multi-million dollar product.
So how did Cerebras fix that?
They solved the physics problem. They designed an architecture that can dynamically identify microscopic flaws on the silicon and literally route data traffic around those dead zones without breaking the chip.
That is wild. And what's fascinating here is what that 108% stock surge actually represents. It isn't just retail investors getting excited about clever silicon manufacturing. Mm-hmm. It represents the enterprise market's utter desperation for a viable alternative to NVIDIA.
Absolutely. NVIDIA currently commands over 80% of the AI hardware market. The industry is terrified.
Oh, for sure. Terrified of monopoly pricing power, extreme supply chain constraints, and just the sheer geopolitical risk of relying almost entirely on a single company's architecture.
Tech giants want a second dominant player in the hardware space simply to keep NVIDIA's pricing models honest. But the crucial nuance for you listening is understanding where Cerebras actually intends to compete. They are not trying to beat NVIDIA in the realm of training foundational models.
Right. Training is still NVIDIA's domain.
Yes. NVIDIA's highly networked architecture is still incredibly flexible and powerful for building a massive model like the next iteration of GPT from scratch. Cerebras is aiming to win the war of inference.
Inference being the actual application of the model in the real world. Like when I open a chatbot and ask it a question, the computational math it executes to generate my specific answer in real time, that is inference.
Exactly. Running these models in live production at scale is incredibly expensive. The WSE3's unified architecture could prove radically faster and more cost-effective for serving up AI applications to millions of simultaneous users.
But they actually have to sell them first.
Right. The true validation metric for Cerebras won't be their stock price. It will be whether major cloud infrastructure providers like AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud actually purchase these wafer-scale chips and deploy them into their server racks for enterprise clients to rent.
Okay, so we're talking about $5.5 billion flowing into a single AI hardware company over the course of a morning. But we have to pivot and ask where all of this capital is actually coming from on the software and enterprise side. And the Tech and editorial clearly illustrates that this capital is being forcefully extracted from human workers.
Yeah, this is the dark side of the boom.
Cisco is laying off 4,000 employees. Their official corporate statement claims they are doing this to redirect resources toward AI investment. But crucially, the CEO is simultaneously conducting press tours, touting record quarterly revenue.
The contradiction is jarring, but it's really the defining corporate trend of 2026. The editorial refers to this phenomenon as the AI layoff industrial complex. highly profitable tech companies are utilizing the broad narrative of artificial intelligence as a corporate shield to justify severe headcount reductions.
So what does this all mean? Because I want to push back on the idea that this is entirely a smokescreen. We have seen verifiable data showing that AI coding assistants are making software developers 20 to 30% faster.
That's true.
Right. AI tools are drafting enterprise contracts. They're automating QA testing. Is it really just financial manipulation? Or is a company like Cisco genuinely realizing they just don't need 4,000 of these specific humans to achieve the exact same output anymore?
Well, this raises an important question about the reality of automation versus the reality of corporate finance. While AI tools are absolutely increasing individual worker efficiency, look at the specific roles being eliminated in these sweeps.
Who's getting cut?
They're often senior network engineers, complex enterprise sales teams, and human resources personnel. These are roles that generative AI is absolutely nowhere near capable of automating end-to-end today.
Interesting.
Yeah. These companies are making traditional, ruthless, cost-cutting maneuvers to pump up their quarterly stock valuations. By labeling it an AI restructuring, they manipulate the market into viewing the layoffs not as a sign of internal distress, but as a bold, forward-looking reallocation of capital.
Ah, so they lay off 4,000 people to free up the cash flow required to buy a rack of those incredibly expensive Cerebras or NVIDIA chips we just talked about.
Exactly. But the mechanism of why the layoffs are happening doesn't alter the reality for the listener. Whether Cisco is actually generating new revenue from AI or purely executing financial engineering disguised as innovation, the threat to the workforce is identical.
It's real either way.
Yes. If you work in networking, enterprise software, or adjacent technology fields, the pressure to proactively upskill into AI-adjacent management roles is critical. The mandate to embrace AI is moving forward with immense momentum, entirely untethered from the well-being of the employees who built these companies.
Which brings us to a fascinating case study. What happens when that top-down, purely financial AI mandate is forced down from the executive boardroom onto a deeply creative product?
It really goes well.
The gaming section of the Taken updates details an absolute disaster at Amazon Games.
Right. Kotaku published a deep dive into an internal Amazon game development project codenamed Project Trident.
Oh.
And the corporate mandate forced upon the development team dictated that they absolutely had to utilize generative AI to build the game's core systems. This was despite the fact that it actively conflicted with the team's actual creative vision and the fundamental design of the game.
It is textbook AI washing. The executives desperately wanted a product they could point to on an investor call and say, look, we are fully utilizing Gen AI in our production pipelines.
Yeah.
Completely ignoring whether the technology actually made the game fun to play.
And it showed. The project suffered from wildly unrealistic deadlines as developers struggled to wrestle unpredictable generative outputs into stable gameplay mechanics. The team was basically forced to pivot the entire game genre multiple times just to accommodate the forced technology.
Oh, wow. Multiple genre pivots. That's a nightmare.
Yeah. Ultimately, the game failed in internal testing, the project was completely canceled, and Amazon's response was to lay off the entire development team.
The bitter irony there is staggering. A team of talented human developers lost their livelihoods because they were punished for the failure of a top-down executive mandate that they actively resisted from day one.
It's incredibly frustrating. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the editorial perfectly juxtaposes Amazon's failure with the massive launch of Subnautica 2.
Oh, yes. Unknown Worlds Entertainment finally launched Subnautica 2 on Steam, 8 years after the original game redefined the survival genre in 2018.
The anticipation was huge.
Massive.
Yeah.
And in its very first hour of early access, it hit nearly 500,000 concurrent players. 500,000 people logging in simultaneously.
And they achieved that massive scale without a single executive mandate dictating their technology stack. They succeeded by fiercely protecting their core creative loop.
Right.
They gave players a terrifying, beautiful alien ocean to explore, meaningful resources to gather, and complex underwater bases to construct. The developers were trusted with total creative freedom over their own IP.
Because AI should be a highly specific tool that developers actively choose to pull out of their toolbox to solve a specific workflow problem. Like, you know, generating complex background textures or optimizing thousands of lines of foundational code.
Exactly.
It should never be an executive mandate searching for a problem to solve. Subnautica 2 proves that genuine human passion, respect to the player experience, and trusting your creative talent will always outperform micromanaged, AI-washed corporate requirements.
It really ultimately comes down to understanding the mechanics of control. Who is actually holding the controller and what are their motives?
That is a perfect way to put it. Let's quickly recap the massive journey we've taken you on today. We started by looking at how Microsoft is granting gamers incredibly granular physical control with the continuous analog scroll wheels on the leaked Xbox Elite 3 controller.
Then we zoomed out to examine the macro-level infrastructural shifts.
Right, happening with Cerebra's $5.5 billion IPO and how their wafer-scale megafactory chips are attempting to solve the physical memory wall of AI inference. But we also spent critical time exploring the human friction caused by all this rapid evolution.
The sudden loss of control. From the severe, unpatched vulnerabilities of the Yellow Key physical BitLocker bypass to the corporate ruthlessness of Cisco eliminating 4,000 jobs under the banner of AI restructuring.
And to Amazon firing an entire creative team for failing to execute a fundamentally flawed GenAI mandate.
So the practical takeaways for you, the listener, are vital today. First, physically go into your laptop security settings. Ensure your BitLocker requires TPM plus a PM to boot up. Break the automated chain and do not leave your encrypted data vulnerable to a physical bypass.
And second, stay highly vigilant about upskilling. The AI layoff narrative, whether it's driven by true automation or pure financial engineering, it's the new reality in the corporate sector. You must protect your own career trajectory.
Absolutely. And that leaves us with one final, highly provocative thought to ponder. We know Cerebras is building these massive WSE3 chips to make AI inference infinitely faster and incredibly cheap at scale.
Right. And if that infrastructure succeeds and the cost of processing plummets, who actually benefits? Will ultra-cheap, highly accessible AI computing power ultimately empower passionate small indie studios like Unknown Worlds to build even richer, more complex games than Subnautica 2?
Or is this massive leap in hardware just going to give mega corporations like Amazon a faster, cheaper stick to force AI washing mandates onto their workers?
Yeah. Are we building revolutionary new brushes for the artists or just cheaper automation algorithms for the executives?
When you press that button, what machine are you actually feeding?
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us. Stay curious. Double check those encryption settings right now, and we will catch you next time.